Welcome, everyone, to episode 305 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to discuss Kenny Atkinson's surprise resignation from the Brooklyn Nets. We are also going to dive deeper into the MVP race because the media is trying to make this a thing. And we are going to finish up by talking about the coronavirus, since this is only getting worse and the NBA is starting to react. Before we get into all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian, but I can't help but think that we're part of the media too, even though we're not on that specific narrative that we're going to talk about.
If anything, we have been anti-media for this season in this particular regard, because we talked about this like two episodes ago, I want to say, when we were going through like the rest of the storylines that matter this season, and we gave 2 minutes to the MVP race because we said this thing is over. And then, you know, I was offline for most of this past weekend. Our friends had been without power since the tornado that hit Nashville last week. So they'd been staying at our place because it got cold and they have a puppy, and we did not want them to sleep in the dark for an entire week. So like I wasn't really online this past weekend. I didn't see the groundswell of support rising after the Lakers beat the Bucks and the Lakers beat the Clippers this past weekend. So yeah, we're gonna go deeper into this today, as angry as it makes me.
So just be honest here. You only saved their asses because they had a puppy, right?
100%. Yeah. And they know that.
Yeah. That's like the clarification. Before you enter my domain,
right,
I'll have you know I'm only doing this because of that existence of that puppy you have under your arm right now.
Yes, you have a 9-week-old Bernese Mountain Dog puppy. I will play with it. The problem is it used to be like so sleepy when they got it, and you could hold it and it would just sit there and fall asleep in your arms. Now it is in the like playful biting phase of puppydom. Mm-hmm. So my hands are just covered in bite marks, but
nice.
It's worth it because she's adorable.
How did Nori take it?
Surprisingly, it took him a little bit because he just doesn't know what to do with little dogs. He's very confused by them, and he always has been. And she's like 20-ish pounds right now. So I think as she gets bigger, he will like her more. But he is learning to tolerate her. And like, they chased each other in our yard. And yesterday, he tried to wrestle her. But like, she antagonizes him. She like jumps up on his face and kind of like paws at him, which is exactly what he needs. And then he went to go wrestle her, and she got terrified and ran away.
Aww.
So, yeah, we got about like another week, and then a puppy bowl is on.
That's tremendous. Yeah. See, there are good things in life still.
That's true. Kenny Atkinson might not agree, though, Mort, because I think this was on Sunday that he announced. Sometime over the weekend. Again, days blended together this weekend for me.
It was Saturday. I was at a party. Okay. Yep.
Oh, there we go. All right, cool. So, Saturday, news comes out that Atkinson and the Nets have agreed to mutually part ways, which at first sounded like, oh, okay, you know, they say that, but that's a nice way to save face to say that he got fired. Then some reports start trickling out. Vincent Goodwill of Yahoo Sports had one, and then Sham Sharania of The Athletic had another, like, inside what happened. And it sounds like it was somewhat mutual in the extent that the Nets players, it seems like, were ready to move on from him. And then he was ready to move on from the Nets players. Vinny Goodwill quoted a leaked source saying, Kenny pushed for the parting just as much, if not more, than Brooklyn. So, Mort, what do you think happened here?
I mean, I'm guessing you want an answer that's bigger than Kyrie Irving, right?
Well, you could include Kevin Durant in that, I guess.
Right. Now, honestly, I know that that's the popular narrative, and I know that we've been hard on Kyrie here on the podcast, but you know, here's the thing about coaching and teams. It's a long season every single year. Like, a lot goes on in locker rooms. A lot goes on in terms of, like, personal agendas, personal wishes for playing time. you know, just personality clashes. So there could have been a lot of things that just kind of underlined everything over like the course of several months. Mm-hmm. And ultimately some players and Atkinson just maybe came at odds because of it. Like, mm-hmm. it just boiled over at some point, which, you know, we see that in every line of business. We see that in our personal relationships. We see that everywhere. So it could have been a natural progression. But, you know, at the same time, we also have to acknowledge that everywhere Kyrie Irving goes, trouble seems to follow him around. So if that plays some kind of role here, you know, that's worth bringing in as a potential element. I don't understand why they were so quick to do this. Kenny mm-hmm. Atkinson, if anything, has proven to be just a wonderful developmental coach. And then you can make the argument, well, the Nets don't need that because they now have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Well, sure, but even then, he still deserves the chance to prove himself with a good team that could potentially make a finals run, right? At mm-hmm. least that's how I look at it. I think it's a weird timing as well. Like, you could have held off into the offseason, but allegedly, you know, Atkinson said, you know, if you want to do this, do it now, which I get, just so he isn't like on the hot seat over the last 20 odd games. That sucks mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand the whole thought process that goes into that. How could this not be solved? He's a good coach. This is where ownership and management has to step in and calm everyone down and put them together and say, you know what, we figure this out. We are not leaving this room until we figure something out. And it doesn't seem like that's happened in the same way. I think they tried, mm-hmm. but it seems like it didn't work, and they didn't do enough of it. Because if it doesn't work the first time, you do it over and over again. Kenny Atkinson is like, who are you going to find out there this summer who's going to be a better coach than him? Brett right. Brown is the one guy I can think of, but he's also a developmental coach. So
yeah.
I'm not sure like what their thought process is here.
Yeah, I mean, Shams had some interesting details in his article that came out Monday. It said that the Nets had a team meeting. They got murdered by Memphis on Wednesday. They have a team meeting afterward. And it seems like kind of everyone was under fire. Several veterans said they want to see Spencer Dinwiddie play like the player we know. Later, people in the room called out Dinwiddie and DeAndre Jordan. Then Durant chimed in, pointing out that the Nets must improve their habits and they weren't building the proper culture traits necessary for a title contender, which, given where he just came from, probably held more cachet than it would from even a guy like Kyrie, who has won a title in Cleveland, but that team was a dysfunctional mess for most of his tenure there. Shams also said Durant and Irving never connected with Atkinson, and there is a growing belief they did not have interest in playing for him. But several other players are also said to have begun disconnecting from Atkinson. So it sounds like communication was somewhat of an issue. The players did not shy away from critiquing him, expressing to him that they wanted him to identify roles better, communicate the team's hierarchy better, change what needs fixing, and not settle for the status quo. So to that extent, I mean, I'm with you. Like, Brett Brown's going to be one of the best coaches on the market this summer, but it sounds like a lot of the gripes the Nets had with Atkinson are probably going to apply to him as well. It feels like for Atkinson, if you're looking ahead for his next job, you know, going to a more of a rebuilding team with low expectations. I don't want to wish the Knicks upon anyone, but like Cleveland, that has Colin Sexton, who's been showing some really promising signs of development this year. It's gone mm-hmm. pretty much unnoticed because he's playing in Cleveland, but you know, the leap is starting to happen for him. They still have Chetty Osman as well. They're going to have another high pick in this year's draft. Like, they could Darius Garland as well. They can cobble together some semblance of a young, intriguing core. Given what Atkinson did in Brooklyn with Dinwiddie, LeVert, Joe Harris, Jared Allen, you know, that's what made the Nets appealing to guys like Durant and Irving. So if I'm a team like Cleveland, you know, a guy like Atkinson would be really appealing to me.
Oh, for sure. There are at least 10 to 12 teams out there who are in that, you know, rebuilding slash right on the cusp of playoffs contention, that you could definitely make the argument Kenny Atkinson would improve them immediately. Mm-hmm. The thing about the roles is interesting to me. Like, the communication factor, I get that communication is key in everything. But when you look at that roster, and when you look at the shot attempt and usage rates and all of that, I'm a little bit skeptical about the whole, you know, pecking order issue. Because mm-hmm. it seems like it's the right guys getting the right shots. So yeah. I'm puzzled by the critique from the players in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, another thing that kept popping up was, this is also from Shams, that there was season-long tension about bringing DeAndre Jordan off the bench. This is a direct quote. Jordan is said to have believed he would be the full-time starting center after he, Durant, and Irving joined the team. When Atkinson made Jared Allen the starting center, it changed the dynamics. So, you know, this was dating back to the summer when he signed that big deal. And we thought, well, okay, this is just, you know, he's buddies with Durant and Irving. They gave him that deal to help lure them, but, like, they better not start him over Jared Allen.
Right.
And Atkinson didn't for most of the year because Jared Allen is a better player than DeAndre Jordan. He correctly identified this guy is more instrumental to our chances of winning than DeAndre Jordan, who is good at his role, but is limited in what he can do because he can't shoot a jump shot.
Correct.
And isn't a good passer. Like, he's great rebounder, good shot blocker, fine, like, you know, he's souped up Enes Kanter at this point.
That so, is correct. Yes.
So, you know, if it's a question of, did the Nets promise DeAndre Jordan one thing when he signed, and then Atkinson, like, was there a fundamental disagreement between the front office and the coaching staff? Like, did the front office promise Jordan one thing, and then he gets to training camp, and the coaching staff is like, screw that. Like, that was Sean. That wasn't me. You're coming off the bench. I don't know. It's hard to say. But it's really interesting to think about, you know, what could Kenny Atkinson have done differently this season? Because as you said, Durant's been out the entire season. Kyrie played 20 games. Like, he's working with a depleted supporting cast. They're still going to make the playoffs. They're, you know, this was always a gap year for them. They were never going to win the title without Durant. It was always about next season and just building the habits to help them hit the ground running next season. I haven't seen anything on the surface this year with Kenny Atkinson that makes me think, like, oh yeah, this guy definitely should have been fired, or this guy definitely should have resigned. Like, this season's going about as I expected for the Nets, but clearly there is some tension behind the scenes that we weren't privy to.
No, I agree with you. At no point, this is why it was such out of left field, right, for everyone. I remember when the announcement came, you know, I got the notification. I immediately went to Twitter, and everyone was like, "What? What is going on? What is happening here?"
Yeah,
like this, there was no indication that he was doing a bad job. I don't think he was doing a bad job. This is a personality thing, and I respect the fact that organizations, you know, can fire someone who is good because of, you know, communication issues, because communication, as I said, is crucial. However, sure, you have to look at the results. You have to look at what he does for certain players. Like, would Jared Allen be where he is right now if not for Kenny Atkinson? Would Caris LeVert be Caris LeVert without Kenny Atkinson? I'm sure to some extent, but I think Atkinson has given both of those guys so many touches, so many minutes, so many opportunities to shine over the past couple of years that we somehow gloss over that development curve. And we just look at, what are you doing now? Because now you have Kyrie, now you have KD, even though he's not playing. And if you're not living up to expectations, well, you need to get out of here. You know, you have to find a balance. You have to strike the right balance between communication and looking at what he does and what he offers. And I think the Nets just kind of used this whole thing as some type of excuse to maybe appease a couple of players, saying, hey, you know what? He doesn't communicate. And that's apparently enough for us. So out you go. And now we're promoting Shaq Vaughn instead, because that's gonna go a whole lot better, of course. I'm not with that. I don't see necessarily what they're trying to accomplish here. And again, who's out there on the market that they're going to bring in, right, who's going to be interesting for them. Like, if they hire Mark Jackson and that's a thing that is legitimately rumored, oh boy, Brian.
Well, so that was my next question. Where do both sides go? And we kind of talked about Atkinson already, but yeah, the Nets, I forget who, I don't remember the guy's name off the top of my head, but whoever writes for Newsday, at least pointed out the ties between Mark Jackson, I guess he's tight with Rich Kleiman, who is Kevin Durant's agent. There were some smoke, at least, suggesting that he might be the next head coach. Vinny Goodwill reported that Kyrie Irving prefers Tyronn Lue, who was the coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers when he won his ring there in 2016. So those are the two names that I've seen mentioned, at least off the top of, I guess 2 or 3 days after this thing went down. Those seems to be the popular names at the moment. But yeah, if you're the Nets, would you go with Jackson or Lou, or is there someone else you would have in mind?
Did you just ask me if I wanted to go with Jackson? Well, you know what? Let me answer strategically here. As someone who likes to watch NBA games, yes, I would love for the Nets to take on Mark Jackson, because that means hopefully we get more Doris Burke on the broadcast instead of hands down, Brooke Lopez is the weakest defender in the starting lineup of the Bucks. Yeah, no, I would love that. And besides, you know what? If we can have all the crazy in one place, that's fine.
I agree. Look, I'm super supportive of this because I'm afraid the Sixers are also going to hire Mark Jackson. So the Nets now have a 2-month head start to save the Sixers from themselves. Please do so.
So, in regards to Tyronn Lue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are we sure that he's a good coach, even?
Yeah, that's the question. I mean, I think he at least seems to connect with his players well, right? If you can,
that I agree with, yeah.
It seems like LeBron loved him, because when he got fired from the Cavs after... he got fired like right after LeBron left, right?
Yeah, like, I think. Yeah, I don't remember the timing, but it was very, very close. It feels like when I think back of it, that it was almost like at the same time.
Yeah, I think I want to say he got fired like 3 or 4 games into the following season after LeBron left.
It was very, very quick. Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember LeBron and D Wade and a lot of guys came out and were like, "That's BS. Like, this guy's a fall guy. Like, this shouldn't happen."
Six games into the 18-19 season, they were 0-6.
Yeah, right. And that was because there is a clash between ownership in the front office and Lou, if I remember correctly. I think it was Lou wanted to play veterans because he knew he was coaching for his job. Ownership in the front office were like, "Hey, LeBron just left. We need to play the young guys." So, do we know that he's a good coach? Could he take a rebuilding roster? Could he inherit the New York Knicks right now and turn them into a playoff team? I don't know. But we do know that he can connect with Kyrie Irving, that he could connect with moody superstars such as LeBron James. I would put Kevin Durant into that bucket too. The Nets have a ton of talent next year. Like, this should be on paper in terms of who you're inheriting skills-wise. This will probably be the most appealing job on the market. It's probably going to be between them and Philly. But both of those teams, you also are inheriting a lot behind the scenes. And that's what you have to figure out. Can you handle all of the extra stuff? Not just the X's and O's on court, but can you placate Durant and Irving or Embiid and Simmons? Can you placate your ownership group, whoever it may be? I think Tyronn Lue could do that part of the job well. So right. I think to that extent, he actually does make some amount of sense for the Nets.
It's just a question of whether he can pull off the X's and O's and like make the correct adjustments in a potential playoff series, like on a game-to-game basis. But I agree with you on a personality level. Yeah, he should definitely like align pretty well with both Durant and Irving. The question is, do you win a title if you keep trying to appease those two?
Mm.
That's what I want to know. Like, my first reaction to this, that was actually looking up if Kyrie Irving had a no-trade clause in his contract.
Ooh. Does he? I don't think so, right?
Nope.
No, he can't, because he has to spend four seasons with the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
Neither of those guys do.
Right. I think we're going to look back at the 2019 summer and go, this is where the Nets took the wrong turn.
Yeah, and you've been on that for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I still think it's a gamble you have to take just based on the talent upgrade. But this was always the risk, right? You built this incredible culture over the last few seasons. You're a bunch of plucky overachievers. You have a ton of young talent. You look like the sky is the limit for you. But at a certain point, you push your chips in and they either hit and you win a title or they don't. And I don't want to say they're stuck, because I think not only do Irving and Durant have trade value if they were to go that route, I mean, teams would have to be willing to take on, again, all of the baggage that comes with Kyrie. But like, something tells me the New York Knicks would still happily trade for him. Like, there are desperate teams out there that need a superstar that will not be getting one in free agency or the draft, or don't have the patience to see one through in the draft, that would take Kyrie on, I would go out on a limb to say, despite all of the other stuff.
Trade Kyrie for RJ Barrett and a few prospects from the Knicks, rehire Kenny Atkinson, and just go, hey, coach, we're sorry. Here you go. We have a whole bunch of new young players that you can mold within your vision.
Yeah.
Have fun.
But if you trade Kyrie, does that piss off KD?
I don't care.
You have to.
No, I don't. I don't have to. Look, I don't think Kevin Durant is going to return as Kevin Durant.
Mm.
I hope so, for his sake, but I don't think so. Look at his age.
Yeah.
And that's an Achilles injury. I understand that he's a strong shooter and that his game wasn't necessarily relying on athleticism a whole lot. I understand that. But he takes such big strides. He stretches his body so much that this is an injury that could, have some serious mental ramifications moving forward. Like, maybe him thinking, okay, maybe I can't step the same way that I did before, where I just stretch my entire leg out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe I have to be a little bit more compact. Maybe I have to do these things differently. Maybe I'm in my head a little bit about it. And at the same time, he's going to be 32 this year. I don't have to take account to Kevin Durant whatsoever. Like you said, he'll still have some level of trade value. I'll trot him out there. I'll clap on his shoulder and go, go get 50. And then if he plays well over the first 20 games, bye.
Mm.
I get it. Like, this is very reactionary.
Yeah.
But like you said, I was never in on this plan. You remember me when we weren't recording last summer. I told you so many times, this is dumb. This is the dumbest thing they could have done.
I feel like you said that on an episode.
I did? Oh.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you...
I don't even remember that.
I don't know if you went that far.
I probably was a little bit more political, though.
Yeah. I mean, I think you at least expressed... definitely when the rumors were coming out, at least, you were expressing skepticism of like, well, the Achilles plus both of these guys are moody. This could end very badly.
Yeah, and Kyrie, this is the thing. Kyrie, it boils down to Kyrie, right? One thing is the moodiness of Durant. I think, you can swallow that.
Right.
But Kyrie, being the sort of guy that he is, man, I mean, you know how he threw his teammates under the bus early this year.
Yeah.
There's also a whole bunch of rumors, like, circling around him, just in terms of how he does things off the court, in terms of, like, the way he handles himself.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a whole bunch of noise all the time. Eventually, teams are just going to be, against trading for him. They're going to be against playing him. They're going to be, we don't want this. He is superbly talented. He, from a skill standpoint, he should be in the MVP conversation every single year.
Mm-hmm.
But let's look at Cleveland. Trouble. Boston. Trouble. Brooklyn. Trouble. This is the same thing over and over again. that's the I saw a lot of people, you know, compare the situations of Brooklyn and the Clippers last summer. Like, oh, this is the same thing that happened. No, it's not. Because if you look at Kyrie and if you look at Kawhi, they're polar opposites. So, yeah. This was a risk. This was a gamble, and it's not one that I don't think it's a gamble the team should make again. If, when Kyrie hits the open market as a free agent in what is that, 2022, 2023? I don't know when it is.
I think they took 4-year deals, so it would be either 2022 or 2023.
Then I think it needs to be a situation where teams are, like, really having to secure themselves in regards to his contract. Just write up all kinds of stipulants, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I still think, again, the Knicks are out there. Like, there would be a team willing to gamble on him. I think it probably won't get to that point next season. If anything, they're going to bring in a new head coach. I don't think Jack Vaughn is the one who keeps the job full time. It wouldn't surprise me if it's Lou or Jackson, or I don't think it should be a first-time head coach. I'll say that much. As much as I love Becky Hammon and think she should get a job somewhere, I do not wish this upon her.
No, you don't want that evil on her. That basically, here's the thing. Becky Hammon, if you're listening, just stay out of New York for your own sake. Just don't, neither New York team. Go to somewhere safe and warm. You deserve nice things.
Yes, yes. Any first-time head coach. What about D'Antoni if he gets fired?
Well, see, this is interesting because D'Antoni has such a strong history of working with stars.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows, very much like Tyronn Lue, how to handle himself around stars.
Yep.
He knows how to trigger them. He knows how to get the best out of them. He can incorporate systems where stars are more inclined to accept that because of his track record. Mm-hmm. I know that it didn't go well in New York, but you know what? That's New York. I don't hold that against him.
Right.
That would be interesting. I would probably prefer D'Antoni to Lou, and I would definitely prefer D'Antoni to Mark Jackson. Look, Brian, honest to God, I have this glass right alongside me that had a few drops of milk left in it. I would prefer that sitting on the bench to Mark Jackson, okay?
I would not. I think the Nets should hire Mark Jackson. Please, 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 please save the Sixers from themselves. All right, let's go into a different non-Nets topic. Equally dumb, possibly even more dumb, in fact. So again, we talked about the MVP race 2 episodes ago, I think. And we brushed over it. We spent 2 minutes. We said it's over. It's Giannis. Story done. Then the Lakers beat the Bucks on Friday. Giannis hurts his knee in the game. He's going to miss. He missed Monday's game against the Nuggets. He's going to miss at least one more game. LeBron, meanwhile, leads the Lakers to a win over the Clippers. And then all of a sudden, not only is it an MVP conversation, but people are now saying LeBron James is the MVP favorite over Giannis because of 1 or 2 regular season games, one of which in which Giannis hurt his knee and played through it and then has to miss the next 2 games. More, like, what's going on here? Why is this a topic still?
So here's the thing. I actually want you to just go on a rant because I'm always the guy who craps on awards. Okay. I'm always the guy who goes on the whole NBA awards should be defined.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go, Brian. Just All right. go. Unleash your inner Mort.
So here's the thing. LeBron James is having an incredible season, right? If this was any other year, he would be right at the top of the MVP conversation. I have no problem admitting that. Leading the league in assists in his age 35 season doesn't make any sense what he's doing. There have only been 3 players in NBA history to average at least 29 points, 13 rebounds, and 5 assists. Wilt Chamberlain did it twice in 1963-64, in 1965 and 66. Elgin Baylor did it in 1960 and 61. Baylor did it in 42.9 minutes. Wilt, in both of his seasons, averaged at least 46. Giannis Antetokounmpo, this season, is averaging 29.6 points, 13.7 rebounds, 5.8 assists, and 30.9 minutes.
Is that good, Brian?
12 minutes less than anyone in NBA history has ever done this. And again, only two players in NBA history, both of whom played 60 years ago. Like, LeBron is having a great season. Giannis is having a historically unprecedented season. If you look, I tweeted this out yesterday. I just literally did like the player comparison finder on Basketball Reference, just screenshotted the advanced section in which Giannis is ahead of LeBron in every conceivable category. PER, 31.7 to 25.9. Win shares, 10.4 to 9.4. Win shares point per 48, 0.282 versus 0.218. Offensive box plus minus, defensive box plus minus in general, value over replacement player. All of these things. Giannis is ahead of LeBron. Go to ESPN, real plus minus. Who's atop the board? Giannis. Go to player impact rating. Who's atop the board by a mile? Giannis. He's at 8.99 PIPM. The next closest is Kawhi at 6.25. This is not... Find me an argument for LeBron other than he's old and old players aren't supposed to be this good. It does not exist. You can't say LeBron is more valuable to his team than Giannis. They are equally valuable. You can't penalize Giannis for having better teammates. That's stupid. You can't say Giannis is in the worst conference. It doesn't matter. The Bucks are annihilating everyone they play in both conferences. And until this little bump they hit this past week, they were, you know, on pace for 70 wins this season. Only two teams in NBA history had ever done that. They're not going to hit it now because Giannis is going to miss some time. But still, they were on that pace for most of the season. This is a historically good team. Giannis, who won MVP last year, is better this season. He's averaging more points, more rebounds, more threes, and two fewer minutes per game. Why are we overthinking this?
That felt nice, didn't it?
It's just crazy to me. It's like, I get we're trying to manufacture debate, right? This is the embrace debate talk show. We need to talk about something for the next month. But, like, we had that episode recently where we said, okay, MVP is basically over. Rookie of the Year is probably over as well. Love what you're doing, Zion. There's just too much of a time gap. Like, Ja's going to play 40 more games than you. That is what it is. But, like, Coach of the Year is wide open, and there are so many good candidates for it. Defensive Player of the Year, wide open again. Giannis is probably the front runner, as we discussed. But there's still time to make up ground. It's not an overwhelming consensus here. Giannis should be the overwhelming consensus favorite for MVP. Two regular season games from LeBron do not change that. The one caveat, I will say, if Giannis is forced to miss, God forbid, like the rest of the season with his knee injury, the door cracks open because then you're going to have a pretty significant gap in games played. But if he comes back, you know, within the next week or two, and he's the same old Giannis, putting up 30, 10, and 5 in like 15 minutes. It's over.
But Brian, LeBron had to deal with Kobe's death and the China stuff.
Oh, my God. Oh, that was, like, I like Dave McMenamin, so I don't want to trash him and say he's, you know, whatever. Like, I think if he could have that moment back, he probably would. Or he would at least reward it. Because, you know, I said this on Twitter last night. Like, if we are using had to put up with ridiculous circumstances as the primary MVP criteria, I'm giving the award to a Knicks player or a Kings player every year. Maybe a Sixers player during Burnergate or during the Markel shoulder saga or whatever. But that's it. Like, that is not a criteria for MVP. Now your argument against awards in general is that we don't have concrete criteria for MVP, and MVP especially You know, Rachel Nichols has been campaigning, like, let's split the award up. Best player in the world, player who had the best season. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, most valuable player, is it best player on the best team, player who's having the best season, player who is most valuable to his team? Like, his team would be, you know, is winning 50-plus games with him, and it would be a 15-win team without him. You could at least, like, since there is no way to measure that, you could use that as an argument for LeBron. Like, the Lakers suck without him on the floor, whereas the Bucks are, you know, they're annihilating teams to a historical degree with LeBron on the, or with Giannis on the floor, but they're still beating teams without him because their bench is better. But, like, I just, he's just, Giannis is just having a better season, guys. It's not a slight against LeBron to say that.
It is not. And I think that's very, very important. No one is trying to minimize what he is doing. No right. one. Yeah. I have not seen a single person, and you know Twitter is a cesspool of raw hatred. Mm-hmm. Yet despite that, I have not seen a single person argue that LeBron is not having an excellent season. This is not about LeBron having a bad season. He's not. He's clearly, you know, an MVP caliber player. That is not the discussion here. He's leading the league in assists. He's actually playing defense again. He's one of the most influential stars ever of all time, and is proving that this year. The thing is, Giannis has just been better. It seems inconceivable, but it's true. Giannis, despite being, what, 25 years old, is just doing something that, as you said, is unprecedented. This is like, he is having arguably the best regular season of all time.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we don't award that ultimately, then what are we doing?
Yeah. Shane Young, who is a fellow contributor for Forbes, had a little chart up the other day, and he was saying, I think it was Steph's 2015-16 season, if I remember correctly, they were saying was the best offensive season of all time, and Giannis was right there in terms of what he's doing. That I think that was
offensively?
I think that was the year Steph was unanimous MVP.
Right. And then we throw in Giannis's defense as well.
Right.
Look, as far as I'm concerned, Giannis should be, you know, the clear-cut MVP. He should be the defensive player of the year. This should go down as, you know, the best regular season by a single individual ever, at least so far.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where we are in the league today. We are seeing players getting more and more freedom, so more and more, you know, records and milestones are being broken. And I understand that, you know, some people are kind of like arguing, well, he's only playing 30 minutes, but that's kind of, to in my eyes, that's just further proof of how good he is.
Mm-hmm.
That means he delivers pain to the opposing team in 30 minutes, and that's enough. That's enough to win. That's when Mike Budenholzer says, okay, Giannis, okay, go sit down. They're dead already.
Right.
They're dead. Ease up. Come on. Come on. Get back into the fold. It's okay. They're already dead.
Right. Like, do we want, if Giannis doesn't win MVP this year because he played fewer minutes than LeBron, which is why the only reason he would lose, because if he was playing four additional minutes, if they were both playing 34.9 minutes a game, Giannis would be, you know, take it on a per 36 basis. Right now, per 36, Giannis is averaging 34.5 points, 16 rebounds, and 6.7 assists. So knock that down by 1 minute, he'd still be averaging like 30-plus points, 15 rebounds, more than 6 assists per game. I'm going to go out on a limb. I can double-check, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's never happened before. Yeah, no, none of these guys. Wilt and Elgin, none of them had. I mean, frankly, none of them had more than 5.2 assists. If you're going by, has any, like, I'm going to double-check this, but this would suggest that Giannis would be the first player in NBA history. Yeah. He's the first player in NBA history to ever be averaging what he is right now. 29 points, 13 rebounds, 5.5 assists. And again, he's doing it in only 30.9 minutes a game. So do we want Mike Budenholzer to take after Mike D'Antoni or Tom Thibodeau and play Giannis 38 minutes in the regular season for no reason and run him into the ground and then have him not fresh in the playoffs? Or is it okay that the Bucks have just been steamrolling opponents to such a degree that they don't need Giannis for more than 30 minutes a game? And he's still putting up these numbers. Like, that's what's... We're not arguing for Giannis on a per 36 basis here. He's putting up unprecedented historic numbers in limited playing time. Like, that should not be used against him. That should be used for him.
Of course it should. Of course. I want to give us a little bit of credit, though, because before this season began, when we did our season previews, I think it was our season previews, you and I talked about how Giannis had played just under 33 minutes last season.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I said, you know what? It is possible that he has developed so much even further, because he set the whole, I'm only at 60% of my capacity.
Yeah.
And then we said, you know, if that's true, Mike Budenholzer could end up playing him just 30 minutes a game.
Mm-hmm.
Lo and behold, it's true. Like, yeah. I don't, like, remember how many people doubted Giannis is going 60%?
Yeah.
I believe him now, Brian.
I do, too. Like, what's the most absurd thing about all of this is that he is just entering his prime, right? He just turned 25 in December. So he, in theory, he's only going to continue getting better over the next few years. And if he's already putting up lines that have never before been done in NBA history, like, what does Giannis 2 years from now look like?
No, he's going to be absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. And I think part of this is also, like, the legacy thing with LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they know that he's 35. So yeah. We're not going to see him forever, and people want to give him that final award. And I think in part of it is also, like, they want to give him, you know, the hardware to sort of match up against Mike, like, admit it or not, media. But that mm-hmm. is a narrative that is often run within articles and news segments and whatnot. It is the constant effing Michael Jordan comparisons.
Sure.
I think this is one of those things where you just kind of want to align it so we can have that discussion for the next 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to do that. That discussion is already happening and is going to keep happening for years and years and years. Yeah. That's quit it. Give the award to the right player. And right. Here's the thing. If LeBron actually ends up winning the award, I am going to boycott the entirety of NBA awards. You're going to have to do the awards preview thing with me. I'm just going to sit there and stay quiet for an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah. That's fair. Well, again, I mean, you're assuming, like, Giannis comes back in the next week.
Right, of course.
Yeah. Do you agree that if he misses, God forbid, if he misses the rest of the season or even, like, the next few weeks, that, like, the door isn't entirely slammed shut on LeBron?
Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, look, where we are right now, it's what? You have to look at wins and losses. And right now, you know, Dallas is they've been beaten up a little bit. You know, Luka is having some hand issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this could be a statistical decline for him over the next couple of weeks. So that's just going to separate him from LeBron even more, or LeBron separating from him, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go to the Clippers, who also have this fantastic record, and you look at Kawhi, but he's missed a lot of games.
Mm-hmm.
Then who's left? You go to Philadelphia? You really don't, because they have not had anyone who have played up to that level of standard.
Harden.
You go to Toronto? Well, you can add Pascal Siakam to the conversation, but ultimately he has not been as good as LeBron. So yeah, if Milwaukee loses Giannis for the rest of the year, it's LeBron's, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, that would just go down to LeBron would end up playing 20 more games than Giannis.
Right.
So at that point, I think it's a valid discussion if you want to award, you know, longevity or whatever, availability. Because, yeah, Luka missed some time. Like, Luka was right in this race early on in the season, and they missed some time and then kind of fell back to the pack. Harden was in there for a little bit. Like, it's a two-man race at this point. It's LeBron or Giannis. I don't think you can construct an argument. Even if Giannis misses the rest of the season, like, Giannis and LeBron would both have to miss the rest of the season to construct an argument for anyone else at this point, I think.
I think if Nikola Jokic had played like he did in January all season long,
mm-hmm.
January and February when I look at the numbers right now, then he would have been in there.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he showed up a little out of shape and played his way in for the first month, but yep. looked apathetic and was drawing the ire of his own fan base. So
those first 30 games completely killed him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Had he not had those, if he comes in next year in the shape that he is now, mm-hmm. and he starts off, that then I could see like him being thrown into that conversation.
For sure. Yeah. All right, let's wrap up, Mort, with the other big news that we're still kind of waiting on to see exactly what happens. But, you know, we talked about coronavirus a bit in the last episode. We need to continue that conversation here because the NBA starting today, we were recording this on Tuesday, starting today, all media personnel are banned from the locker room just to keep players safe, hopefully, and avoid risking contagion, even though they're still going to be playing in stadiums with 20,000 people. The NBA has a call scheduled for tomorrow in which we'll find out whether they are taking more extreme measures. It sounds like they have at least asked teams to figure out plans of who would they deem essential personnel. We don't know whether that means they're planning to play games without any fans in stadiums. I know LeBron, you know, reporters asked him about that possibility. And he's like, nah, F that. I wouldn't play in the games. But, you know, it sounds like other sports leagues around the world have either completely shut down or are playing in closed stadiums. So it's at least a possibility. Over the coming weeks, Mort, like, what do you think the NBA does here to combat the spread of this virus?
What they are going to do, or what they should do?
What they should do?
Close it down.
Like shut down the whole season, or just play in closed arenas?
In closed arenas. I have to believe that the team doctors are well informed and are enough on top of their players to know if anyone is, you know, in that danger zone.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a problem, of course, if a guy on a team gets it and then you figure out, oh, hell, everyone on this team has it now. Then you have to figure out what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, if you just isolate the living hell out of them over the next couple of months, you know, I understand that that's not optimal. Look, I get it. And it's not because I want to join in on hysteria and all of that, but look, this is a major issue and it's spreading like wildfire right now. Mm-hmm. I understand that the death toll, like in terms of sheer volume, isn't a huge number, but it's still something that there isn't like a set, you know, what do you call it, like an antidote, what do you call it,
a vaccine. Yeah,
vaccine.
And there won't be there will not be for a year, mostly.
Okay, so there you go. Like, why risk it? I'm also risk adverse when it comes to these sort types of things. Like, mm-hmm. right now, we had a huge outbreak here in Denmark today, and I'm sitting here contemplating just keeping my son home from school just to be on the safe side, or just at least writing the school going, hey, develop a plan right now so I don't feel really, really badly delivering my child to a school right now where he might get infected. This is a global thing. This is, I mean, I don't understand the people who are basically laughing at other people for wanting to feel safe and feel like they have to take some precautions. I understand that. And if the league's players don't care about their own well-being, okay, that's on them. I think, you know, fans, 20,000 of them in each arena, that's a health risk at this point, unfortunately, because you can walk around with this thing and not know that you have it. And apparently, a friend of the podcast, Duncan Smith, had some, he did some Google searches in regards to how many people were Googling certain things. And apparently in North America, how to wash your hands had blown up on U.S. U.S. Google. So basically Americans were like researching how to properly wash hands. That's not a great sign, Bob. So no, I think out of necessity, you need to install some precautions. And the beat writers are very much against this because they feel like they can't do their jobs. Yeah. I also understand the whole shutting down arenas means that concessions workers are maybe not getting their pay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that should be a stipulant to it. I think they should still get paid even though they don't, you know, work the games. Because if they don't work for a month, you know, people can't pay rent and all that. But this is where NBA teams just have to band together and think of everybody involved, everyone who's associated down to the lowest level. Just go, hey, you know what? This is important. This is about human beings. You'll get your salary for this month or next month or whatever it demands. We just have to make sure that everyone is safe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is going to have wide reaching implications for the NBA. Albert Namad, who is a cap expert, on Twitter, mentioned like this could affect BRI. I mean, if they close stadiums and fans aren't coming in, that's affecting gate receipts. Gate receipts get factored into basketball related income. That means the salary cap could go down next year significantly. It was projected $115 million this with the latest update, but there's no guarantee it stays. They have months to still figure out exactly how much it is. And if they're not getting gate receipts, they're like, I would assume that they're going to do everything in their power to continue broadcasting games. I know at least from like the Turner side of things, Warner Media now, they've banned all non-essential travel, as most companies have at this point. But, you know, March Madness is coming up next week. They, at least at the moment, are saying that counts as essential travel. So I think that, like, figuring out how to have the league's broadcast partners still involved here, I don't think any side, both broadcast and the league, will want to risk not televising these games, even though you're adding more people to the stadium that, you know, could be infected. But yeah, I mean, Robbie Calland on Twitter yesterday, as you mentioned, highlighted how many people in the stadium, how many stadium workers who are part-time employees, not salaried, will be affected by this. And whether it's the NBA or the individual teams guaranteeing their salaries, even though they have to stay home, that's definitely a consideration too. Because if a lot of people are banking on that type of income, and then can't pay their rent because all of a sudden they can't go to their work for 3 weeks because of their stadium. Like, you know, some people can work from home, but if you have a job like that, you can't. You know, like, I could edit from anywhere, but if I'm selling nachos at a concession stand and the concession stand is closed because the stadium is closed, there goes my salary. So it's going to be really, I mean, there's a lot to sort through and in a very short period of time, which makes this especially complicated. Like, this is a huge headache logistically for the league to sort through. But it's, as you said, it's critical. They have to do it not to tamp down fears about this thing, because, you know, it is very serious. Like, most people will recover. Most young, healthy people will recover. You'll get sick. It will be awful, but you will not die. But older people, people with underlying illnesses, and, like, that's not to say that some young people won't die. Young, healthy people won't die. Like, you need to be smart about this thing. So I don't know what the answer is, but I lean toward agreeing with you, Mort, that I think it wouldn't surprise me if they end up closing stadiums at least for a few weeks. But, like, I don't know how long. I don't know that a few weeks does it. And at that point, like, what do you do when the playoffs roll around? Like, that is a, you know, those tickets only go up in value. Like, that's, again, going to go back and affect basketball-related income that much more.
You know what? I have the answer for that, but here's the thing. you know, U.S. media is never going to allow it because for some reason, what is it you guys have? You have the whole seven words you can't say on TV or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
What I would do, to make it up in terms of ratings, I would have players mic'd up in the playoffs.
Ooh.
So you can hear them trash talk, calling out plays. Because if there's an empty arena, at the very least, I want to listen to what players are saying, calling out plays, you know, yelling at each other, I got five, or, you know, curse the living hell out of each other if they miss a rotation.
Yeah.
That would be intriguing. That would be like a true inner glimpse into the workings of an NBA team on the court. It would be such an appealing factor for viewers mm-hmm. that they would tune in, and then maybe you can make up some of that loss off of TV ad revenue instead. Mm-hmm. But because NBA players swear like they work at the docks, you know, it's... I don't think that's even a feasible solution, but that would be part of it. That could have been one of those things. Just make it a more appealing product in terms of the television. That includes, by the way, not putting Mark Jackson on TV. Just want to point that out. And by the way, oh my good Lord, has China cost the NBA a lot of money this year, huh?
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's not ideal. I will say, who is it? Ian Eagle and Stan Van Gundy, the guys who are doing the Tuesday night games.
Right.
They've been great. I want them on national broadcast more. Like, switch them with the ABC crew, and I think we have a much better NBA product. I'm not just saying that because those guys are Warner. But, like, Stan Van Gundy has been the most pleasant surprise, like, play-by-play surprise of the season for me.
Isn't that because he isn't like his brother, where you put a guy in charge of a broadcast that literally hates basketball?
Yeah, like he likes it. He enjoys watching basketball, which is an upgrade over most of the play-by-play guys on other networks. But he also, like, he's just had some really smart, nuanced conversations about individual players. Like, there was one game. It was the Sixers, and I don't remember who he was playing, but he was, like, talking specifics about Tobias Harris's game that, I mean, he coached Tobias Harris for a bit, so he came from it from a first-hand perspective, but it was like, holy crap, like, that's just a really astute observation. Like, you know, it's similar to what Doris Burke does, and what makes Doris Burke so effing great is that she really knows these players and knows their strengths and weaknesses and, like, points out, like, oh, wow, that was actually a really impressive move, given that, you know, he doesn't tend to do this. Whereas Jeff Van Gundy's like, oh, he took another three. Ugh, not in my day.
Yeah. Yep. Can we clone Doris and have her work every NBA playoff game?
Yeah, I'd love it. She could be the only one in the arena for all I care.
Yeah. Because she's a clone and we can get as many clones as possible. Right. It's fine. Every clone is dispensable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, like, you know, we're seeing the economy is feeling the hit right now. But, like, it is, when you really sit down and think about, like, how many industries this thing is affecting, it is wild. And it's...
I will say the people who make Purell, they're probably doing pretty well.
I know. My wife was like, you should invest in whichever company comes up with the vaccine. Invest in them very quickly because they are going to make all of the money.
Yeah.
It'll be the one stock. Every other stock is dying right now, but that one company will triple its valuation overnight.
And then the vaccine in the U.S. is going to cost like $300, and here we'll get it for like 30 kroners.
Oh, 300. I thought you were going to say $300,000 because that's what it's going to cost. $300, I hope.
Oh, your country is an abomination sometimes.
Yeah. I was seeing someone yesterday, you know, talking about this, the stadium workers. They're like, I bet if the government had more services and was a little more socialized, we wouldn't necessarily have these issues. Yeah. It's wild. It's going to be interesting.
At least you're not communists like us here in Denmark. That's true. Apparently.
That's true. I'm just excited for the asterisk on this year's title to always be known as the Coronavirus Championship. Because you know that's what it's going to come down to. Whichever team, like, usually it's whichever team could be healthy in the finals and, like, doesn't suffer any big injuries. This year, it's whichever team doesn't get coronavirus is going to win the title. Like, the Sixers still have a chance. Oh, wait, but they employ Dr. Spichemin as their doctor instead of an actual medical staff. Oh, God,
no. This is going to be, like, the shortened season just with coronavirus.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. No, that's horrible. It's true, but it's horrible. No, I think ultimately, and I get that people are listening, you know, some people listening will say, well, that's just hysterical. You know, the death rate is low and all that. Like, you're married to a doctor. You're getting a lot of inside info on this particular virus. And you've told me on and off, like, this is not good. Like,
no, it's
this
gonna...
is not good. You know, you can't compare it to the regular flu. Like,
right.
Take your precautions.
Yeah. And in the United States in particular, not to stoke panic here, but it is much more widespread than we know. Just because there haven't been many diagnosed cases doesn't mean it's not everywhere. It just means our testing infrastructure is terrible, which is, again, if, like, from the NBA perspective, this is why it would be smart to be extra precautious until we can ramp up testing like other countries have. Yeah. Like, if a month from now we have tests everywhere and you can just get it on demand, and, you know, the federal government is covering the cost of these. Like, I know a couple of states have ordered insurers to waive costs of these tests so everyone can get tested. You know, it's not as much of a headache as, like, oh, I have to go get tested for this. I'm going to have a $3,000 bill when I come home. But right now we're not at that point. So again, if you're bringing 20,000 people into stadiums every night in close proximity to one another, you know, I've been in bathrooms at NBA stadiums before. I promise you, not everyone washes their hands after they go to the bathroom. Like, if you are expecting people to practice proper hygiene, you have not been around people. Sure.
Especially men's room.
Yeah. Like, even if 95% of the people at that stadium, 99% of the people at that stadium do it, it only takes the 1%. If that 1% is sick.
And that 1% is usually extremely disgusting.
right, thereby increasing their odds of getting sick and then infecting everyone else. I mean, this will clearly not be the last time we talk about this season, but it's something just to keep in the back of your minds as we head into the home stretch of the regular season, that this next month and then the playoffs are shaping up to be very weird and not at all how we expected they would be at the start of the year.
Agreed. So, Brian, just to wrap up coronavirus, you and I are taking the Spencer Dinwiddie route, right? Or no, the CJ McCollum route. You and I will not be signing autographs when people stop us in the streets, right?
Correct. Only elbow bumps from here on out. On that uplifting note, Mort, we will wrap up here. Thank you to all for joining us as always. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes. Please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we are now being hosted on Spreaker. So check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. And people, wash your hands.
Yeah, shelter in place.